So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes.
Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A.
Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview.
The Wisconsin Republican Party has a new chairman, Andrew Hitt, and congratulations, recently chosen by executive committee.
Thank you, Steve.
And thanks for coming to Wisconsin Eye to talk about you and the party and your goals.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm fascinated by the bio on your website. You're an attorney with Michael Best and Friedrich, right?
Correct.
Yeah. The bio says, before law school, you were a cancer researcher for McArdle Lab and the NIH. Is there more societal good in being a cancer researcher than an attorney, Andrew? What a unique evolution. Talk about that.
True. And my wife's actually a physician. I met her at UW-Madison in pathogenic microorganisms lab.
Okay.
So we met over the glow of the Bunsen burner.
Over a Bunsen burner?
Sat by each other. And, you know, I get a big kick out of her physician friends when I said I left the profession of cancer research to the noble profession of law. Usually gets a big joke out of them.
And not the Shakespeare quote. Remember that first? But never. Okay, we'll,
right.
We'll move on. seriously, you thought of getting into politics with the goal of getting, getting into law with the goal of getting into politics?
So I was in college during 9/11. And, you know, like a lot of people, that day had a huge impact on folks. Mm-hmm. For me, I kind of said, you know, I wanted to find something where I could impact my community and give back every day. Obviously, cancer research is an amazing job, amazing, noble profession. But, you know, I thought about where could I impact and what could I do? And being an attorney, oftentimes communities turn to attorneys for board positions, to help the community, serve the community. And so that's really why I made the change. It was a pretty dramatic change, but one that's really worked out well for me.
And you're a graduate of Richland Center class of 96?
That's right.
You want to do the fight song or anything?
No, it's okay. I could do it with Ann Walsh Bradley. Justice Bradley.
Oh, really?
Graduated from Richland Center. My dad taught her in high school.
Oh, my. So your dad was a teacher then?
He was.
Okay. So you go to law school, and then what was the nexus that brought you into politics? You clerked for Justice Ziegler.
That's right.
And then you were deputy legal counsel for Governor Walker.
Correct.
Served in other positions in the Walker administration.
Yes.
Why did you get into politics?
Yeah, so when Governor Walker was elected, obviously the transition team turned to people to ask who should be in the legal counsel's office. Mm-hmm. My name came up, having clerked for Justice Ziegler. So interviewed for the office of legal counsel, was fortunate enough to get the deputy legal counsel position. Justice-elect Hagedorn got the chief counsel position. He and I are good friends. We clerked together on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. In fact, he started midterm, and when he started, he actually lived with my wife and I for 4 or 5 months before he moved his family over.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
So you two are very, very close.
Good friends.
Right.
Yep.
Brad Courtney is the former chairman. He chose to step down after 8 years. Yep. You raised your hand. Why to be chair?
You know, I look at this time period, and I think it's an interesting time and a great time to be chair. When you have a governor, the party has a certain role. Right now, with not having a governor, the party has an opportunity to kind of look at itself, reformulate it, build itself, and that's exciting. Being chair at this time, at this time period, is just a really exciting time to do it. I can't say that I planned it forever or anything like that. I started out as treasurer of the party a few years back, became first vice chairman. I ran for that in December of last year, became first vice chairman. And then Brad started to make clear that he was, you know, just going to be around for a few months. And then as he stepped down, I became acting chairman and then really decided, you know, I think this is something I'd like to do. I think I can do a really good job at it. And I had just a lot of support from not only elected officials, but more importantly, the executive committee.
Mm. Well, politics both in Washington and Madison is kind of a cauldron right now. So what are your goals as chair for the next 2 years?
Sure. So I would classify them in short-term and long-term. Short-term, obviously do whatever I can to make sure that the legislature stays Republican in 2020, get the president reelected in Wisconsin. And then long-term, though, is really focusing sort of on the long game of the party, building up the local membership, building up the local parties, focusing not only on the local parties, but also local office, making sure that we're recruiting our people, conservatives, into the school board, the city council, the county board, and building up the farm team. Because, you know, Speaker Fitzgerald, or Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Fitzgerald, they do an amazing job finding people to run for the Assembly and run for the Senate. I think if I can focus on, you know, those local races and helping build up that farm team so they have a pool to pick from, and then growing the team over time, is just really important to building the party. So long-term, building the party; short-term, those two elections, and also ensuring that the Supreme Court stays conservative.
Why did Mr. Trump win in 2018, and why do you think he's going to carry Wisconsin in 2020?
I think he definitely will carry Wisconsin in 2020.
By a bigger margin than this, less than 1%?
I don't know. I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, all right. But
I think he's going to carry Wisconsin in 2020. I think the story that really hasn't been written, except I saw an article in the New York Post about the Hagedorn race, really the untold story there is the effect that President Trump had on that race. You know, the RSLC ran an ad late that talked about, comparing, what happened in the United States Supreme Court versus, you know, what was going on in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. I think that really motivated people. I think as you look at the map and you saw how many people came out to vote for Justice Luck Hagedorn in the northern part of the state, and also down in the Fox Valley, and then down the Lake Michigan corridor, all the way down to Racine and Kenosha. I think that's a recipe for success for him. We need to replicate that, but we also need to focus on Dane County and Milwaukee County. There's a lot of Republican votes there, and we can't just give up and say, those are counties that the Democrats win. There's a lot of Republican votes there. We need to focus in Dane and Milwaukee, get those votes, and then, we saw, how we can turn out our voters in that Hagedorn race.
The Hagedorn campaign ads that featured President Trump, were they just targeted in the Fox Valley, Green Bay?
Great question. I don't know that for sure. I think they were targeted more in northern Wisconsin and in the valley, but I don't know for sure in terms of where they played in Dane County and Milwaukee County markets.
I interviewed three political science professors this morning on the Governor Evers' first 100 days, and one of them said that he thought the attacks on the Justice-elect Hagedorn's faith really were significant in terms of people resented it. What role do you think the negative attack ads on his comments when he was a law school student played?
Yeah, honestly, I think it was classic Democrat overreach. It absolutely energized the Republican base. It didn't just energize the Republican base or our traditional grassroots. More and more new people, were coming out and saying, I want to get involved in this race. I want a yard sign. I want to make calls. I want to go knock on doors, because they were so offended by it. I think absolutely Wisconsin, it's a purple state, but it's a traditional state. Those kind of messages, they don't work here.
Well, okay, let's talk about the purple state. President Trump carries it in 2016. Justice Dallet and Tony Evers win in 2018, and Mr. Hagedorn wins in 2019. So we have this whipsaw. I mean, you can get whiplash in Wisconsin. So we're truly a purple state.
That's right.
Why?
I think
you have Senator Johnson, Senator Baldwin,
right,
at both ends of the political continuum. Excuse me, I didn't give you a chance to answer.
Yeah, no. I think you're absolutely right. It's a purple state. President Obama and Governor Walker weren't on the ballot at the same time, but it's pretty clear that there were Walker-Obama voters in Wisconsin. I think, Wisconsin is an independent thinking state, and I think that people look at who they want to vote for, and they look at some of the positives, and they say, you know what, I like what he or she has done. And, I sort of wonder if Wisconsinites, sometimes they don't focus as much on the negative. I don't like what he or she did, so I'm not going to vote for him. It's more, I like what that person did. I'm going to vote for him. I'm going to overlook the thing I don't agree with. And I think that's part of why we see this kind of back and forth that goes on. It just means that the ground game, the candidates, the ads are all, you got to bring it all together in order to be successful here in Wisconsin.
With the farm economy in Wisconsin truly hurting, and some industries, I had interviewed Congressman Stile this morning, he said, yes, some industries are getting hurt by the tariffs. What winning themes will the president have in 2020, Andrew?
Well, I think absolutely the Supreme Court is going to be a winning theme again, promoting democracy and freedom around the world. A strong America will be a winning theme. People mm-hmm. care about that. They don't want to see America weak. And I think that's going to be a motivating theme throughout. I think economic prosperity will also be. We see the stock market doing amazing right now. I think those are going to be some of the themes that we see, and I think it's going to be a recipe for success.
Do you think former Massachusetts Governor Weld should not challenge the president?
No, I don't think he should challenge the president.
Why?
The president has done an amazing job. He's done so many good things. I completely support the president. I think our executive committee, our party in Wisconsin supports the president, and that's where I think we should be.
What's the symbolism in the president's decision to come to Green Bay Saturday and not go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
Well, I don't think he's gone yet.
You are right.
Right.
You're correct.
I think it's wonderful that he's coming to Green Bay. I live in Appleton, so I'm even more excited that he's coming to my congressional district. I will tell you that it is something to have the President of the United States come to your district 2 weeks after you've been elected chairman. I wasn't expecting that, but I'm thrilled to have him, and you know, I'll be there and cheering him on.
Well, what themes do you expect him to hit in Green Bay? Because we're 16 months out from the presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
So just some of the themes that you talked about?
Yeah, I would expect to see the same themes. Obviously, immigration is going to come up. You know, you're going to see that. I think you're going to see, American freedom, promoting democracy. I think you're going to see a strong America portrayed in his speech. I don't think there's going to be any breaking new ground, but it's really about coming to Wisconsin and getting our grassroots energized and geared up for the 2020 race. We cannot wait until January of 2020. We've got to start working now. The president knows that. There's a reason he's coming to Green Bay. We're glad he is. It's interesting and wonderful to see that the Democrats have found Wisconsin this cycle. So we're happy to have them. Welcome. So I think those will be the themes.
Okay, I have a confession. I started to read the 438-page Mueller report and didn't get very far. Now, you've probably read the summary.
I've looked at it, yes.
Looked at the summary.
Mm-hmm.
Your reaction to the Mueller report?
So, and I think this came out right before the report, but when I saw that there were 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search warrants, and 500 interviews, I'm a former prosecutor. I was a felony gun and drug prosecutor in Milwaukee before or after I clerked for Justice Ziegler.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked at how many search warrants were executed in this case. That's a lot of intrusion on Americans. I can't believe that there was that much government intrusion. I think a lot of people, and I think you've kind of seen a little bit of a bounce since the Mueller report. I'm not surprised, really. I think people are looking at this and saying, wow, you know, they looked under the hood that much, and there wasn't anything there. And I think that's a big takeaway. And for me, that was just shocking to me.
Congressional Democrats, of course, want to hear from Mr. Mueller
mm-hmm.
and former White House counsel Don McCann. Are they overreaching in that, or should those two former high officials come and tell Congress their personal knowledge of the Trump White House?
Yeah, I don't know a lot about the issue. I know I've seen some reports about here are the list of former White House officials that have gone and testified. Here are the ones that have not. I think executive privilege is very important. I don't know that I have a lot to say on that. If I were in the mix and advising, I wouldn't advise to have anybody go and testify before Congress.
What about those even White House aides on the issue of security clearances? Because that's a new issue.
Yeah, I don't know much about it, and I got to say, federal executive privilege isn't something that I've studied, so I don't know that I would have a strong counsel on it.
Your reaction to the most liberal Democrats who say, let's in the U.S. House begin impeachment proceedings, sir?
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see that. I think Speaker Pelosi has made that pretty clear. I mentioned, kind of classic Democrat overreach before. I think it would be pretty much classic Democrat overreach if they were to do that. Don't see it happening. I think to the extent they want to talk about it, I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing for Republicans.
What's your elevator speech when the question is, what's the difference between the Democrat and Republican Party nationally?
Elevator speech, I look at where the Democrats, what the Democrats are talking about right now and where they're going, and I just feel like they've veered so far to the left. And I'm sure you can say, people are going to say the same thing about Republicans, but to me, where the Democrats have taken things, or at least some Democrats have taken things, is so far out of the mainstream. Some of the things that Cortez is talking about are just so far out of where I think everyday Americans are at. And so, I think we've got a great message: economic prosperity, limited government, fiscal restraint, promoting freedom and democracy around the world. I think those are the things that speak to people. That's what I believe in. That's what Republicans believe in. And, I think some of these things that they're talking about are just so far to the left that it's really unmotivating to most Americans.
Bernie Sanders, of course, won the 2018 Wisconsin Democratic primary. Former Vice President Biden is scheduled to announce tomorrow. Who do you think would pose the biggest, the most serious challenge to President Trump, both in Wisconsin and nationally? Which Democrat?
I don't know if I have an answer to which specific Democrat would pose the biggest challenge to the president. I think they all have their issues. They all seem to be a little bit on an apology tour. And I don't see any of them as being strong candidates to go against the president. I think the president's going to be very strong. I think he can motivate people that we haven't seen in a long, long time. I expect that he will do that again. And I don't think any of them right now, I don't look at them and say, oh, geez, I hope it's not that person.
Mm-hmm. What about the president's style? Do you wish he would tweet less? A very unique way of being president, Andrew.
Right. We're in a different time. We used to communicate with press releases and an interview here or there, and we're really seeing a time period where how we communicate and how elected officials communicate is just so different anymore. And we see so much of it communicated through social media and Twitter. Right.
The role of social media, generally good and positive for the discourse of politics in our nation, or a negative factor?
I think that it allows people to speak directly to the electorate. That's a positive thing. I think as campaigns, as political people, we might get a little too caught up in Twitter and what we put on Facebook. I think that not everybody spends every waking minute, refreshing their Twitter feed. Right. So I don't know that I would say in campaigns that I think it's all good. I think we need to focus on the people aspect of it, the knocking on doors, the making phone calls, kind of that, grassroots organizing and getting out there and talking to the people and saying, hey, here's what we believe in. We're voting for President Trump, or we're voting, for Speaker Voss, and really getting out there and explaining to people why we've got the right message.
The summary that you read of the Mueller report, which puts you ahead of me, I haven't finished the summary.
I think I read most of it.
Understand. How concerned are you about the efforts made by Russians in the social media. Do you think they had a very dramatic and significant effect on the turnout in 2018, or has that been overstated?
First of all, very concerning that they would do that. Very, very concerning, very troubling. The impact, I think, is really hard to assess. There's so much information out there. There's so much information. There's so many avenues for information out there. Could it have had an impact? I suppose sure. But I don't know that it had such a dramatic impact. There's probably a lot of people who understand, data and how this stuff works that can answer it better. At the end of the day, I think we've got to concentrate in getting our message to the American people, to the people of Wisconsin. It's a winning message, it's a motivating message, and it's a positive message.
You sound like you're concerned about potential Russian hacking in the 2020 elections, are you?
I don't think so. We have a really good system, I was counsel to the president in the recount in Wisconsin in 2016. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the things that we dealt with in that recount, or at least thought about it. I think our system is very secure here in Wisconsin. It would be troubling if they tried. I don't worry that it's going to impact or interfere with our election.
What did you learn about politics from working with and for Governor Walker?
Great question. Governor Walker was such a regular guy who could sit down and talk to anybody, and he was such a caring guy. When I worked for him, three big things happened in my life. My dad passed away, my son was born with chronic kidney disease, and my mom passed away. I got to know
him. You went
him.
Through three major issues.
Right. Each...
Is your son okay?
Yeah, he's doing great.
Okay, excuse me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for asking. He's doing wonderful. Nobody knew that he, called me on each of those and followed up with me. I learned that no matter how busy you are, no matter how important you think you are or feel you are, you always have time to take care of people. And that's what he did an amazing job at.
And he should run for what next time?
that is obviously up to him. He did an amazing job being governor for 8 years. What his future holds, I don't know. He's pretty busy right now, I think. But at the end of the day, I'm just grateful for all the wonderful policies that he helped bring to Wisconsin in those 8 years.
Is your party unified? And the reason I ask is this disagreement over in the 5th Congressional District where Governor Walker's been disinvited.
Sure.
Mr. Sensenbrenner was upset, some comments when Governor Walker was filling in a radio talk show. Is your party unified beyond the 5th? First in the 5th District and then statewide?
Yeah, I think it is unified. I'm a big believer in the 11th commandment.
Speak no evil.
That's right. big believer in that. But I think it's unified. Individual people are going to have disagreements. That's normal. Not really much to it. You think about what we went through as a party, losing the governor's office, losing the attorney general. We could have had a very, very tumultuous time in our party, but we didn't. We all came together. Senator Johnson has stepped up and has really risen to the occasion and become involved in the party. His steady hand and steady leadership has been wonderful. I'm very, very grateful for it. So I think we just faced an unbelievable test when we could have had a tumultuous time, and we didn't.
Why did Democrat Mr. Evers beat? How did Governor Walker lose to Mr. Everson?
Yeah, great question. Obviously, there's a lot of things that can impact an election. As we have taken a look at maybe how we could have done better or how we could have improved things, I think the biggest thing that I see really is you can have all the money in the world. You can have the best data in the world. You can have all the technology and techniques. You can use all of that to target the exact person that you want to target. But that doesn't mean that they're going to open up that Facebook ad, it doesn't mean that they're going to pay attention to that TV ad. It doesn't even mean they're going to read that mail piece. You can do all of those things. But if people are a little unsatisfied, a little unhappy, if the political climate is a little bit negative, that's where you need kind of a grassroots army, a grassroots infrastructure, you know, going out, knocking on doors, making phone calls, talking to community members, family members, friends, people they don't know in their community, church members, having that personal touch to say, hey, I support Governor Walker, or I support candidate, you know, candidate so-and-so, and here's why. I think that we could have done a better job at that, at engaging the grassroots. I think, you know, there probably was some complacency out there. Governor Walker has won 3 times. He's not going to lose. So we have an amazing data program at RPW. We always, we've had for a long time. It's one of the best in the countries. But we need that soft side too. And that's what my goal is to balance that out. Keep the amazing data program, keep the really good voter file, but also build up this grassroots infrastructure so that we can have that personal touch. And I think that could have made up the 30,000 some votes.
The Charles Franklin poll said that some Republicans resented the governor's 2015 run for president. Had he not run for president, would he be governor today?
No, it's so hard to tell. I think there are certainly people who didn't want to see him run for president. They loved him as governor. They wanted to keep him as governor. So I think that could have been a factor. I think there's a lot of factors in elections. Was that 30,000 votes? Geez, you know, there's no way to tell.
Very high turnout in Milwaukee and Dane County. But okay, new subject. What political openings has Governor Evers given your party and Governor Evers' first 4 months in office?
I personally think the lame duck lawsuits has presented us with an opening. I think the decision on the appointments really has given us an opening. There's no doubt in my mind, no question, that the extraordinary session was completely constitutional. I think the Supreme Court of Wisconsin is going to overturn those rulings. We're going to go back.
That's a very important precedent. We have had extraordinary sessions since 1981.
Right.
Hundreds of bills, budgets, redistricting. Labor contracts have been confirmed,
right.
And there's just been some very important action taken in extraordinary. And you're right. Confident that those will be upheld?
Yes. And I think they have to be. I mean, the separation of powers is so critical. And that's really what this is going to be. It's a separation of powers issue. Right. And, I think that the move on the appointments and rescinding the appointments, I think it's been a huge distraction. I think that that's given us an opportunity Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald have really taken and run with. I think that's been maybe a little bit of an overreach on the Evers administration.
Okay, two final questions. We're almost out of time. You have expertise. You've worked on healthcare issues.
Mm, yep.
What's wrong with the Democrats who want Medicare for all?
Medicare works and works for the population that it serves right now. That doesn't mean that it's going to work if you explode it into the entire population, into the entire country. I'm not a believer that government is the solution. So I would hate to see one payer system, Medicare for all. I think that we need to do more about incentivizing the right behavior in healthcare and using innovation. I think those two are the key to making healthcare better in the future. I don't think government is the key to making healthcare better.
Okay, final question. You're in your early 40s?
Yeah, 41.
Why should a millennial or someone in their 30s and 40s be a member of the Republican Party of Wisconsin? What does your party have to offer that the emerging generations?
Sure. I think economic prosperity. I think the party that believes in believes in a strong America. I think we're a party that has, you know, a lot of mainstream views, and the party of the Democrats right now is moving so far to the left that I don't think that's appealing for the long term. I certainly don't want my kids growing up in a socialist society, and there's so much talk about that right now. So I think we have a wonderful party. I think we got a lot of young people who are coming in, a lot of young leaders who are growing up right now and coming into the party. And I think it's a wonderful time to be a Republican.
So who's going to keynote your convention May 7, 17, 18?
We've got a bunch of people that are coming. The delegation is going to be there. Senator Ron Johnson is going to be there. It's the theme of the convention this year is a new day, a new party. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about how we're going forward. A lot of different people are going to be involved and up on stage and speaking. I'll get a chance to introduce myself to folks. I think it's going to be a wonderful convention.
Wisconsin State Party Chairman Andrew Hitt.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking to Wisconsin Eye.
You bet. Thank you.
See you at the convention.
Sounds good.
Thanks.